Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, we have some hot crosstalk at the top with Brian and Gina. Talk a little about societal ills and how to repair them. And then we play the Rotten Tomatoes game as well. That's all coming. First, real quick, J.B. Weld. J.B. Weld, proud sponsor, the Adam Carolla Show. Hey, that's me. The epoxy adhesive brand used by both pros and DIYers that have been around for over 50 years. And you can get them at jbweld.com. Our retailers everywhere, including Home Depot, AutoZone, and Lowe's. J.B. Weld.
From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, New York Times best-selling author A.J. Baim. With Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, and we'll play the Rotten Tomatoes game. And now, he has not watched Hamilton on Disney Plus as many times as Gina has. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice, but you're going to mandate you get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling friend. Love that about you, right, Gina Grad?
4 times in 36 hours.
And Ball Brian.
Hey now.
Wow, that is a lot. I guess
3 times in 24 hours.
You can watch musicals a lot more than you could watch The Usual Suspects or some drama, suspense, whatever, because just like you could listen to a Beatles album over and over again.
Yes.
The repetition is the song, and the song is better as you anticipate it, whereas if you're watching, the movie Seven, you can watch it again, but you got to wait 5 years or whatever. You can't just go back to back to back.
Sloth, gluttony.
So there's kind of,
Have you seen Hamilton yet?
No.
Okay, well, I'll add one layer to this, and Gina, you might agree or disagree. I would need to watch, I've seen it, it's amazing, it's spectacular, it's a hit for a reason. I need to watch it a few times just to understand all the nuances of the dialogue. Yes. It's all sung and rapped.
Yeah.
So, and it's a lot of it's very fast, and at a high pace. So like, you listen to at least listen to it, if not see it a few times, to really understand the nuance of the dialogue.
Well, you're absolutely right. The first time I watched it, I just watched it and took it in. The second time, I played along with the home game and Wikipedia stuff as I went. So now I know everything about John Lorenz and Marquis de Lafayette and everybody.
Yeah, I got a bit of an introduction to it with my daughter probably 4.5 years ago when it dropped.
She knows every word.
And they were all singing it. So, well, I'll definitely go back and take a look at that for sure. Because, look, good is good.
And it's amazing.
No doubt it's good. Yes.
And I thought about you because at the, for the curtain call and, you're just seeing this spectacular for everything from, the revolve that moves in two directions at the same time to just the incredible structure of how this play is put together, the unbelievable voices. I thought of you saying this is the best of what humanity has to offer. It really is.
It's a true spectacle.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, think about, you think about things like jazz, great musicals, great innovation, space programs and things like that, and usually can go, that's the mark of a good society. Well, the best society is a society that has great jazz and a great space program. You know what I mean? Like, you don't want it to be all space program or all jazz. You're either Germany or Jamaica at that point. you want a little something in between. You know what I mean? So I think this country, we never tire of beating it up, obviously, but why does this country have a great space program and great jazz and make killer, equipment and have state-of-the-art medicine? And it's like, because we have a lot of different people from a lot of different places doing a lot of different things, the guys that are playing the jazz saxophone are not, at the baked potato that night playing gigs, and the next morning they're down in the lab of UCLA studying genes. No, it's a different group of people. Mm-hmm. And I don't think the folks that are down in the lab at UCLA are playing the jazz saxophone that night. It's kind of a two-way street. Once in a while, one of those ladies will be good on the violin or the viola, but not but reading sheet music carefully.
Oh,
not,
yeah.
Not scatting.
Not improvising.
Right. So why do we then have this country that has, you know, where we essentially have, I don't know, Alan Dershowitz and Michael Jordan in the same place? And then what other countries have that kind of range, you know? And if the answer is that's kind of unique to us, then that is unique to us. And that's because of this diversity.
Yeah.
We have.
And how about an attaboy?
Yeah. How about an attaboy? And how about the fact that I can sit in my little suburb on any given night and say to my family, hey, what do you want to do? You want to do Indian food tonight? You want to do barbecue? You want to do sushi? You want to do steaks? Like, what do you want to do? And within a 6-mile radius, I'll get a very good version of barbecue, sushi, Indian, Thai food, Mexican. How about that? How about just there's some good version of this? And the when you pull into the Mexican joint near my house, it's really good. It's got a lot of Latin people behind the counter and in the kitchen. And when you go to the Thai place in my neighborhood, there's a lot of Thai people working there as well. Families on both ends. Good thing. Right? Is that an issue? We find that problematic?
I think so.
What's the fuss? Tell me what's happening. That was for you, Gina.
That was great. Thank you for that Jesus Christ Superstar reference.
Yeah, yes, it was. So, I don't know. I see white guys going into the Thai place. I see white guys going into the Mexican place. I'm a white guy. Sometimes I'm in the mood for Thai. Sometimes I'm in the mood for Mexican. I don't know that we need to think about it as much as we're thinking about it. By and large, seems to work pretty well. The restaurants run. They pay their taxes. Yeah. Things are clean. Food's healthy. It's a decent price. I don't know. Yes. Are there some bad Mexican restaurants, some bad Thai restaurants? Yes, there are. Yes, there are.
Some bad actors.
I love this notion where it's like nobody claimed there's no such thing as versions of whatever we're talking about. Negative. Yes, Brian.
I was going to say, not to get too woo-woo about it, but like what you're talking about, to tie them together, if I might, the restaurants on the one hand and the jazz or whatever, you know, musical expression you want, these are two versions of the same thing. These are people expressing themselves or their culture, or what's important to them, what they grew up with, or what influenced them to become who they are, whether they're cooking, you know, their best, authentic dish, or they're making music that moves them. This is what makes America great.
And also, I don't know how many other nations pull this off. How many have this? How many do this? I'm not saying
fewer than most.
Yeah, I'm not saying others don't. I don't know who does it better. Who has more diversity? Who are we comparing ourselves to? Either now or in the past. Mm-hmm. Now, I think the problem is, we keep comparing ourselves to a nation that lives in the future, which is not really a good way to compare yourself. I mean, we do it constantly. We go back in time and go, that guy may have been, he may have ended slavery, but he owned slaves, or he may have ended slavery, but he talked a lot of shit about black people. So we need to tear his shit down. But it's like, okay, now we're building time machines. And that's going to be a very difficult way to process life. You know what I mean?
And judging people back then by today's standards is impossible.
Why don't you yell at Tessa? Why don't you have a job? How come you're not contributing to this family? And then she'll go, I'm five. And then you can go, no, I've got a time machine. I've jumped ahead.
Yeah,
you're 37 and you're a piece of shit laying around this house eating my cereal and crapping in my toilet.
So, that stops today.
Yeah. I don't know how this time machine thing works with kids. I don't know how it works. You know, why aren't you doing... Well, ask her why she's not doing advanced trigonometry while we're at it. Like, write all this stuff down.
Tessa, do some trig.
Yeah.
And speaking of being woo-woo, you think of people that support that theory and aren't kind of like in that hippy-dippy place. Aren't you supposed to live by be here now? Be here now. You don't live in the past. You don't live in the future. You don't live in time. You live now.
Yeah, like that. It's funny because my mom in her sort of hippie ilk would always talk about being present.
Yeah.
But be present while you watch Roots, the miniseries, and go, God, yeah. Can you believe what we did? Can you believe what we did?
I feel like from your description, no one has more existential crises than your mom. Like, she is the last person to live in the now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, it's also one of these things where the answer is in your question. Like, when you go back 150 years and you go, can you believe what we used to do? And it's like, yeah, we used to do that. And now we don't, because we decided it was bad. So we fought some wars and we tried to fix it.
Some trigonometry.
Yeah. So anyway, it's and also, if you would like to make yourself unhappy in society or in any relationship. So in a relationship, well, you can go micro or macro. So micro is your personal relationship with your spouse or spouse-to-be or girlfriend or whomever, even a neighbor. That is your micro. Your macro is your relationship with the nation, this country, and the world. You want to make yourself miserable? Build a time machine. Just be thinking all the time of what you did in the past, what you could have done in the past, what you should be doing in the future, and just live in either in the, here's where we were, it was horrible, here's where we need to be, it's not happening fast enough, and then you'll just live in purgatory with your time machine in the middle in misery. Everybody, you want to... We've all probably been in them. It's a relationship where people can't let things go that happened, you know, like that time you did this or you said that or you acted this way. You want to be miserable in a relationship. Focus on what the person did. So now I'm going to go completely down the road on this metaphor. Every one of us is married to or in a relationship with a good person that has made mistakes and possibly flawed in one degree or another, just sort of like all people are. So we can go back and focus on the couple of mistakes that were made along the way or the couple of flaws that they may possess and make ourselves miserable in current time in our relationship. Or we can understand that that just comes with the territory. It's basically what happens when you're in a relationship. It's almost like what happens when you build a nation. You're building a nation, and there's episodes of, oh, Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, President panicked, locked up a bunch of innocent Japanese citizens. That's right. That's what happens. It's going to be littered with those moments along the way in the building process, the same way that when you're building a relationship, there's going to be some blowouts and some infidelities or some issues or some whatever that go along. Now, what's a bad relationship? One that has a ton of those and never corrects, doesn't correct those. It's not do they have those, it's how do you handle them when they come up. Sorry, Brian, you're going to say
something. Our guest today, by the way, he is an expert in the FDR, Harry Truman era. He wrote a few books on it in addition to, you know, Go Like Hell. So let's bring this up when he comes on. I'm sure he'll have a ton of insight.
Yeah, so we are now living in a time in our nation where there's a lot of people who are living in a time machine, toggling back to the evils of our past, fast forwarding to no child should be left behind and everyone should have world class health care. And I'll not sleep until that happens. And you're going to live in a world that was filled with misery and pain in the past. And then you're going to live in a world that doesn't really exist. And it's always disappointing because we don't achieve enough or get there fast enough or settle those goals. You know, if you're going to announce, you know, we need to be carbon neutral by 2024, you're going to be disappointed because we're not going to be carbon neutral by then or whatever it is your plan was. So you're either disappointed, you're devastated by the past, or you're disappointed by the future. And that's going to make for a lot of unhappy campers. And then at some point, you'll get to the end of your life and you'll realize you lived your life in some other time period than when you were actually living your life.
Yep.
And then you'll realize it was all for naught and you'll be miserable, but it'll be funny to me. Although,
silver lining,
I'll probably be dead because I'm at least 25 years older than most you miserable fucks. So at least you have that. You have that. All right. Gina has a video that I've not seen. I don't even know. I don't know what the subject is.
You're in for a treat. So I follow this account on Instagram, and I'm going to pull it up right now so I get it precise. It is called Street People of Los Angeles. And it used to be a little, not, I wouldn't say wacky, but just kind of like pointing out the craziness of, you know, like downtown and everything Garriga sees out his window. It's become a little more sincere and like, you know, tagging, you know, Bonin and tagging the governor and like, what are you doing about this? Well, right before the show, I was scrolling and I found an example, and I'm going to read you the caption first. It says, CNN attempting to scare and shame us into submission as a homeless person drops pants and takes shit on the beach on live TV. And of course, not wearing a mask. So this apparently aired on CNN.
So she's standing at the beach submitting a story.
Yeah, like in front of the pier.
Right.
The end of July. They could have completely persons in the back. ICU beds. No more.
Looks like a woman.
For people
could be.
In the ICU.
Slightly built, drops the shorts.
Like this. And so here in California, you can expect
squatting.
That there may be
squatting,
some new,
just blocked a little by her shoulder.
So just to kind of put it all in perspective, if anyone wants to visit our great state.
Yeah, it's definitely a breakdown of the rule of law. Oh, it's all the stuff I've been talking about for a long time. It'd be nice if people police themselves. It'd be nice if the homeless people, if their family members showed up and took them in, so they didn't have to squat a log on the bike trail at Venice Beach. But unfortunately, sadly, that's just how life works. And also, you know, I've been harping on this sort of family thing since Loveline, because I started to realize that all the woes in our society, all the abuse and all the drugs and all the unemployment, all the whatever, it was all coming from these bad families. But and everyone wants to talk about, you know, I always talk about crime, unemployment, like all the things that could be fixed with good families. But just imagine what it would do to the homeless population. Let's just imagine ourselves living in a world where this homeless person had an intact family, like a family as we know it, not a rich family and not a family, you know, where, oh, well, she works at a psychiatric ward and can get him a bed. Like, not that. Just an intact family. Just
the bishops.
The bishops. Just the bishops.
Right down the middle.
Right down the middle. Mediocrity.
Yep, that's right.
Goal achieved.
Not what I meant.
So here's what I'm saying. That would, and then assholes who argue with me, and anyone who argues with me is an asshole, they say, yeah, but what about the guy who's schizophrenic and he won't take his meds and he's a black belt in Taekwondo? It's like, okay, well, we're not going to help that guy then. All right. But then there's another 81% of the homeless that we might help, or 44%. Or 73%.
It's a big chunk,
either
way.
It's a big fat chunk of people. So I'm going to go ahead and announce that I don't know what we could do to help that guy. But as I said, my little experiment done on the ground is have a brother-in-law severely schizophrenic. Severely. Severely. I mean, unemployable. Kicked in at 19. Not able to work. Severe. Oh, he's okay. He's living with his brother in a guest house on his property. Like, he's being. Yes.
Do you guys see him ever? Do you interact with him?
I refuse to interact with him because I know a lot of people don't know this, but I know schizophrenia is contagious.
Oh, well, I didn't really. Oh, well, the droplets.
Well, then you're smart enough to interact with him. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not so down with the COVID-19, but the schizophrenia thing, I am.
See.
I do have concerns about.
I see him on
occasion, and you know he suffers from that, but he's not suffering in his life. He has people around him; they take care of him, they provide, they look after him, and they all kind of rallied around him. And they didn't quit their jobs and make the guy a full time job. They just sort of take turns taking care of him. and doing what's right. And I've chipped in and, you know, it's like, oh, he needs a new car. Let's find him a used car. You know, that kind of stuff. Who's going to drive him to UCLA to take his medications or to get his evaluations? Someone's got to drive him to UCLA. Like, yeah, that's what, that's who drives you to UCLA. Your sister, your brother, your mom, your dad. That's who's in charge of getting you to UCLA. Right. And the more the family falls apart, the more this you're going to see. And the more that you're going to see is I was thinking about this with Brian. I was thinking about his medications. And then I was thinking about side effects, you know. And I was actually talking to Dr. Drew about it because, I don't know, he's a doctor. I like to put things in that parlance or ease.
He knows things, yeah.
Yeah, I said.
I'm curious what he said.
Oh, I said, no, I wasn't. I don't care about you. I'm saying as as a metaphor. I said, the family falling apart, and it's up. I mean, the percentages are up. And, you know, everyone kind of thinks about it in terms of the black community, because the black community is very high, but the white community is up a lot, too. It's pretty high, too. And so is the Hispanic community. And if you take a look at family falling apart, to me, that's the drug. And the side effects are incarceration and joblessness and spousal abuse and substance abuse and education. Everything is a side effect that suffers. And so I don't know why, but we live in a society that went, all right, what is causing, what's the root cause of the prison population or the violence or the homelessness or the lack of education or anything? I don't know. Smoking. You know, people that come from broken families smoke at a greater, have a higher alcohol intake, probably use less condoms and turn signals. Okay.
Oh.
Yes, it's proven. So the point is if it's this one cause leads to all these side effects, why don't we talk about the cause a little bit and see what we can do instead of chasing the side effects? Because all you do is chase side effects. You chase crime. You chase homelessness. You chase addiction. You chase it. You don't stop it anywhere. You chase it. So it'd be nice, at least in this podcaster's opinion, to look at the sort of the drug and not really the side effects. If your patient is having a ton of horrible side effects, so if you're taking this drug and you have rashes and nausea and everything like that, instead of going, well, get some salve for your rash or get some bromide for your nausea. Like, well, why don't we think about adjusting the medication? Mm-hmm. That's my metaphor for this.
Well, can I tell you really fast, when you said that, something just shot into my head and I thought, did I dream this? Or is this true? And I just did a quick Google search. There's this town in, I think it's Geel, G-E-E-L, Belgium. Mm-hmm. And I knew about it because I heard it on a podcast, probably like This American Life or something. And it says, in Geel, Belgium, residents have brought mentally ill strangers into their home for centuries. And I remember hearing this podcast that they just take someone in. It's just in their own little sites, not a big deal. And these people start to thrive. And the community thrives because everybody has a home and a task and a routine. And it's like this town is like a little experiment.
Yeah, people, that the routine part of life that used to be foisted on us by the life we led, you know, that the routine of get up, go to work, you know, do that thing, you know, go pump some well water, go light a fire, boil the water, you know, all the routines of life. The routines of life have gone away, obviously, because of the smartphone and people are working at home and all that kind of stuff. And I got to tell you, when I turn on the news and I see like the 23-year-old blonde chick just screaming her lungs out an inch and a half in front of the black cop, I'm like, you need a little routine in your life, sweetheart. Like, you need a little basic training. You need a little get up. You need Arlie Ermey banging on a trash can with a wooden spoon at 6 a.m. calling you a maggot. This, what we're experiencing is way too much downtime. Way too much downtime. And by the way, I can't believe there's not more incidents of cops just taking a nightstick and putting it in the ribs of somebody. Like, how long could you stand there while some idiot put his face against your face and started screaming at you that you're, you know, traitor to your race before you just fucking snapped? Like, it's insane how much of that's going on. But I've never seen 23-year-old chicks more miserable in my life. And I think it's got to do with this lack of purpose and routine. All right, let me hit cuts, T-shirts, menswear. These things are a menswear staple. Everyone wears T-shirts, but they're plagued by the shrinkage and the bacon neck. Oh, that's true. Color fade, wrinkles, stretching, cuts clothing. Completely change the game. Quality, style, office. You can wear it to the office. You can wear it on a date, anywhere in between. Fit, fabric, function, pre-shrunk, wrinkle-free. Retains shape. I'm wearing mine right now. I'm actually wearing it right under my Podcast One t-shirt, and it's Berks. See, I'll pull it up.
Oh, look at you.
You can choose your collar. You can go crew neck or V-neck or Henley. Also, you can choose a cut, elongated or split hem or basic curve hem. New PYCA. That's Pika. Pika. Polos, and they're like no other polo you've ever worn. Cuts officially reinvented the polo, only shirt worth wearing. Once you wear Cuts, that's it. You'll never go back to your old T-shirt ever again. Right, Dawson?
See why Cuts is the only shirt worth wearing. Loved by your favorite athletes, entrepreneurs, and even podcast hosts. It seems like everyone is wearing Cuts these days. Get 15% off your first order by going to cutsclothing.com/Adam. That's cutsclothing.com/Adam for 15% off the only shirt worth wearing.
One more quick thought. I was watching some MMA fights the other day, and I thought, here's why MMA is the most badass sport on the planet. Because you had a guy who's been on the show, I think, before, Uriah Faber, a kind of legendary guy, and he was fighting. And it doesn't really matter who he was fighting or when it was. It was an older fight, but he was on the ground. A guy was on top of him. His face was a bloody mess. I mean, just a mess. He'd opened up. He had a huge cut that had opened up with it all swollen up like a big mouse next to his left eye. It was all open. It's going to require multiple stitches. And, you know, his nose is probably broken. I mean, he was just a mess. He's on his back. The guy's on top of him. He's dropping elbows on this guy's face, which has already been destroyed. So the ref stops it. The ref goes, hold on, time out. I want to let the doctor look at this because there may be a stoppage here. Mm-hmm. So he gets up, his face is covered with blood. He walks over to the doctor. The doctor's shining the flashlight and opening up the cut, seeing if it's getting down to the bone and stuff like that. It's a mess. And then the doctor's like, I think he's okay to continue. And the ref's like, oh, okay. All right. So the ref walks him back over to the spot he was, and he's like, okay, lay down. Uh-huh. He lays down on his back. He's like, hey, other guy, get on top. You're on top? Okay, get ready with those elbows. Yeah, okay, here we go. The guy's just dropping more elbows on him, and I'm like, Jesus.
That's
great.
How it works?
That's how it works, because that's the position they were in.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be fair to the guy who got him into that position to have them both standing now because of this guy's
Damn.
Cuts. But it was ironic that they had the doctor go, is this okay? I think he's good. I think he's okay. All right, get on your back.
You with
the sharp elbows, get on top.
Yep. Can you imagine if, like, fights by the lockers worked like that with the principal? He's okay.
Get back where you are. Bye, nerd.
All right, we'll take a quick break. We got Rotten Tomatoes coming up, right, Max Zapata? All right, we'll do that, and we'll bring AJ in, who I love, and we'll do that right after this.
For just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat. Stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
Hey, Corolla fans. fans, Mike Dawson here. I got some good news and some bad news. Bad news first, we're sold out of this month's Adam's Monthly Nut. Good news is you'll still be able to get all the incredible products from BeerBong.com and Beard Bro after this month's Adam's Monthly Nut. Head to BeerBong.com and get your 6-foot beer bong and a gold mine of other beer-related products. Believe us, you will get drunk and social distance if you need to. For all of you bearded men out there, remember to head to TheBeardBro.com for all your facial hair needs. A big thank you to both BeardBro and BeerBong.com for participating in this month's nut. We'll see you soon for another shipment of Adam's Monthly Nut. It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Hey, Adam. This is Rollin, 29, Milwaukee. I have an addition to the humor bits lost in time. Where did straitjacket humor go?
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Yeah, it went with Napoleon. That guy thinks he's Napoleon, and guys with giant butterfly nets chasing people. Imagine how that, you know, we take a look back at some of this racial stuff or some of this stuff. Gone with the Wind, there's a racial component. There's also that part where he gets drunk and drags her upstairs to rape her and stuff like that. But think about dealing with mental disease and how it was looked at in every movie and every sitcom. And it was literally a guy in a white suit would chase you with a giant net.
Send you to the loony bin.
Yeah.
That's right, the loony
Booby
bin.
Hatch.
All right, do we have Rotten Tomatoes, Dawson?
And the gang makes their picks, guessing if it's rotten or fresh.
If they guess it exactly, we'll get a bonus 5.
It's the Rotten Tomatoes game. You know how we do it. Give me the Rotten Tomatoes game.
Now all right, this week on the Rotten Tomatoes game, there's a cocktail party. The catch is, only people born on Adam Carolla's birthday are allowed in. Come for the Mangria, stay for the 10-hour movie marathon. We're screening of all of the following films. First, we talk about Paul Bettany. In addition to being everyman's hero for betting Jennifer Connelly, he's also been in some killer movies. Nowadays, people know him from the Marvel Universe, but back in 2006, he starred as the villain opposite Tom Hanks in an adaptation of one of the most famous books of the early 21st century, from 2006, The Da Vinci Code.
Mm.
I forgot he was in that.
That's right. I saw this in the theater.
Yeah.
They obviously did their... Oh, he's right there on the poster. Never mind. I thought he was in the sequel for some reason. Never mind. Never mind.
So right this there. Is the first one. People like the first one, Ryan. I mean, it was talked about. The book was popular. I thought they liked
it. Was a massive hit.
The movie or the book?
The book. I think the movie made a lot of money too, but the book was a phenomenon.
But the Tom Hanks haircut was weird, right? Was that what was going on?
Yeah, long.
Yeah. So,
it was weird.
All right. But
did Paul Bettany keep scourging himself, keep like flagellating himself? Wasn't that, did anyone see this movie on this panel here? He kept like whipping himself or something.
Yeah, I remember.
Self-flagellation.
I remember. Well, sometimes it's difficult because the film doesn't live up to the book. But I remember this was a big movie. I remember there's talk about his hair. I think they liked the first one and not the second one. I have no idea. And I say 69%.
Oh, man, I'm right there with you. I said 68%.
75.
The Da Vinci Code is rotten at 26%.
Really? I'm so
glad
to hear that.
I
boring movie.
I heard the sequel was garbage, but I didn't know the people hated this one.
I didn't know that. All right, we're all off to a horrible start.
Actor Christopher Lee was also born on May 27th. Granted, it was back in 1922. Over the years, he's played villains in many iconic films, from Dracula to Lord of the Rings to Star Wars. Not surprisingly, director Tim Burton loved him, cast him in as many of his films, over the years. But let's talk about The Headless Horseman with Johnny Depp and Christina Ricci.
Yes,
in 1999's Sleepy Hollow.
That's right. I saw this in theaters.
That bodes well.
I can't remember. I didn't see this. I don't know if it's
bad. I have almost no recollection of this movie. I forgot Christopher Lee was in it.
I mean, Johnny Depp's great, and he's usually does pretty stellar work in his movies. I don't know why, what do you think the appeal of a movie like this for a guy like Johnny Depp? Like, is it a money grab? Oh. Does he go, this is interesting work? I mean,
he's getting paid a lot, I'm sure, because it's a big studio picture. But working with Tim Burton, that's like his guy. He's the De Niro, his Scorsese. Mm-hmm. So I think getting back together with Tim Burton and making a kind of iconic story probably was appealing.
All right, so Tim Burton makes good movies, by and large. Johnny Depp, by and large. I didn't hear anything horrible about this movie. I say that's a good enough duo to bring it to 66%.
Now you and I are close again. 61, barely fresh.
Very close, barely rotten, 59.
Sleepy Hollow is fresh at 68%.
Ooh, look at you.
We all got back in it on that one.
That's about right.
Lou Gossett Jr. is also joining the party. And in honor of the legendary guest, we'll look at the film that won him his Academy Award, part melodrama, part sweeping romance. The film that stars Richard Gere and Deborah Winger from 1982, An Officer and a Gentleman.
Never seen this.
It was a big movie when I was in high school. Everyone saw it. I think it had a big soundtrack to it. It had a couple of singles.
Oh, there was big, yeah.
Love Lift Us Up Where We Belong, one of those.
That's the one, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. It had a big romantic ending. Lou Gossett was great. Richard was great, except for the part where he rode his motorcycle to the camp at the beginning and left both his fucking feet out like a pontoon when he took off from the stop sign. If you ever want to realize that someone can't ride a motorcycle, if you guys are ever on the street and you see a guy ride up on a motorcycle to a stop sign or to a signal, and then the signal turns green, and as that person pulls away, both feet are hanging out wide, not back on the pegs, just out for the next 100 feet, that means that person can't ride a motorcycle. Because people who ride a motorcycle don't do that. They put one foot down and they pop it up before the bike even starts. You can just pop your foot up and let the clutch out and you'll just go. That's how guys who ride motorcycles do it. So I knew from the beginning this was fake and that he probably wasn't even really in the military.
What?
Yeah.
Hold on.
I'm serious. So
we verify that?
This soundtrack reached 38 on Billboard's top 200, staying up for 23 weeks. All right. This was a feel-good movie that had Lou Gossett was nominated. I don't know if he won, but he was great in it. And this is a good movie. I don't know what the beef is, if it wasn't, but I'm going to say 87.
Oh, man, we went a little lower, 69, trying to play it safe.
Ooh, 89 for me.
An Officer and a Gentleman is fresh at 79%.
Mm. And Lou did win for that movie.
Lou did win. Mm-hmm. People at 81, so it's pretty close to the tomato meter.
Next up, an actor who's only slightly less famous than his brother. Sure, Ray Fiennes has credits like Schindler's List, Harry Potter, and The Hurt Locker. But Joseph Fiennes is no slouch, currently starring in the hit series Handmaid's Tale. He once played William Shakespeare in the film that beat out Saving Private Ryan for Best Picture from 1998, Shakespeare in Love.
I know we hate Weinstein, but this is such a great movie.
I love this movie.
It's fantastic.
It's probably pretty big in prison, too, so that'll get him some slack with some of the locals, like the Aryan Brotherhood or the Lowriders or the Black Whatever. You know, a lot of those guys are into this. Because whenever I see that show, Cribs, I always see Scarface and then Shakespeare in Love hanging in the guy's custom theater in Florida. So this is good. This is a great movie. And now, is it in the 90s? Is it the? I mean, everyone loved this. It was a cool movie. I thought it was. And also, it's good for the critics, right? Because you got the her disguising herself as a man, and the themes are good. Everything's good. I'm going to say. I'm going 91.
I went a little lower at 85. I think some critics tell this maybe is lightweight.
Mm. Yeah, I may have gone too high. I said 90.
Shakespeare in Love is certified fresh at 92%.
Dang.
I needed that.
See, people have it at 80, so this is one of those critics' movies.
And finally, Kalen may have forgotten Todd Bridges on the initial list. But let's not leave him out of the Rotten Tomatoes game. Yes, Different Strokes movie? Star does appear in a couple movies, including one with David Spade, John Lovitz, and Alyssa Milano. Released by Paramount and raking in $22 million.
Raking in?
From 2003, Dickie Roberts, former child star.
What?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
This is a movie.
Now, who's playing Dickie Roberts?
That's Spade, David Spade. The reason there was a whole. So I was doing Loveline on MTV, and I feel it. What year did you say this was? Must have been during that period.
2003.
Yeah, I think. Or maybe it came on Loveline on MTV, but they had a whole group of movies that were like Deuce Bigelow, European Gigolo, and Dickie Roberts, child star. And they there was a Rodney Dangerfield one where he played a politician called like Bobby Briggs. What was the politician? There was a they would just come up with the name.
Joe Dirt.
Right. They'd come up with the name of the guy, and then they'd go, what's the movie about? I don't know. The guy's name is Joe Dirt. What do you think the movie should be about? They're always shitty movies. They don't really get. It's funny. They miss. They should be. We should have more disdain for these shitty movies in our society, but we don't. We kind of, that's fluff. We got to make fun of Sandler. We don't have time for this stuff. Yeah. But what was the Rodney Dangerfield's movie where he just played? It was a name. It's just his name.
Something Sparks.
Yeah, Bubba. Oh God, it was like Bubba Sparks or something.
Meet Wally
Sparks. Yeah, that was probably like 99 or 2000 or something. There's just a lot of those movies where they put the name on it. All right. So here's how we stand, as far as I can tell. I think I have a very marginal lead, maybe 1.5 points. Brian's a little bit behind Gina. Gina and I are pretty knotted up. Brian, I feel like he needs 10 or 14 points to get back into this. Now, the safe bet on something like, see, David Spade is quietly charming. So people like him. There's a likable guy, and he's good on camera. And so he, you know, this could be a 41, but it could also be an 11, and that's why this one's tough. Shakespeare in Love is going to be 85 plus. It, you know, Shakespeare in Love is between 85 and 95, right? So if you got a lead, just go 90. But this. This could be a 13 type movie, but it could also be 44. It's not going to be fresh. I say, and Brian is going to have to make a move in the low department. Which is my opinion. I'm going to protect by going lower than I thought. Oh, Brian could just go zero. I'm going to say 22.
Zero.
Zero. I split the difference 12.
12. All right.
This is going to be for the win. Dickie Roberts, former child star, is rotten.
Yes.
At 22%.
Oh, look at you.
Kidding.
Woo, that was quietly, when I say quietly, I'll be talking about it for the next 70 minutes, but quietly one of the stronger performances the Ace Man has put in. Quietly. Wow. Very quietly.
Is that a 5-point deduction?
Yes, it is. Here yes, are yeah, your really? Scores.
Mother.
That's why quietly I'll be tweeting about it later.
Gina Grad, congratulations. You made the podium.
Thank you.
Bald Brian, you did as well. Your score, all right. 88, bro. 88. Mm. Gina Grad.
Snowman.
80 for second place.
Oh.
Congratulations. Adam Carolla, 49 for the win.
Wow. Oh, you know what it is? Like, we all got out on the gate with like a 40 burger.
Shitty. Yeah.
And then since then, I only put on like 9 or 8 or whatever since the last four.
Six points
since the 40 burger.
Yeah.
Oh, with the 5 deduction.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
It's the Rotten Tomatoes game. You know how we do it.
All right. AJ Bame, who you got to forgive me when I say AJ Benza or AJ Bame, because I say my toggle back and forth between those two lovable characters. AJ not only wrote Go Like Hell, Ford v. Ferrari, basically. I don't know if that lawsuit's been settled, but it was optioned a bunch of times. Also, AJ wrote The Arsenal of Democracy, which is another great book I read, very interesting about Ford gearing up for World War II.
Whoa! I'm sorry. You read?
Yeah. Oh, I
read
listened.
The whole thing?
I listened.
Oh,
this doesn't add up.
Like, this doesn't add up.
Man. I did the audiobook, and then
good.
First book. I forgot about this. Big Shots: The Men Behind the Booze. All the Jack Daniels and the, all those booze companies with all those names and all those characters and all that stuff. There were real people at some time. It's great, great name, right? Big Shots. Then we got this new book, Dewey Defeats Truman, and we'll talk about the election and the battle for America's soul. And AJ's, he's so good that all his books always get optioned and put in development and all that kind of stuff. So we'll talk to him about that. First, I'll tell you about True Niagen. I've been taking cellular health vitamin True Niagen for a few months now. It's probably more like five or six. I've been on this for a while. I feel great. Dr. Drew's been on this for, I think, a couple of years, and he feels great. As we get older, our bodies experience a near 50% decline in NAD, which negatively affects our health and the health of our cells and our bodies. Lifestyle stressors like intense exercise, lack of sleep, stress on the immune system, overeating also deplete NAD because cells expend more energy to function. Backed by Nobel Prize winning scientists and clinical research and global regulatory approvals, True Niagen is the real deal. I know the owner of this company. He's researched, pretty spent his life building this company and building this science. Support cellular energy and defense. Visit True Niagen, TRUNIAGEN.com. Use the code Adam. Get $20 off any 3-month supply or 3-month plus supply until July 31st. This is the real deal, people. All right, take a quick break. We'll come back with AJ right after this.